Here in our special, looking back 30 years ago when the Baltimore Colts left town on a day very similar to this one. And we're joined now by a former Baltimore Colt, WBALer, and also part of the Ravens broadcast team, someone who I think has a very interesting perspective on that event 30 years ago, and really the days leading up to it. Stan White joins us now. And Stan, thanks for being on the program.
Oh, it's always fun to talk about the old Colts, that's for sure.
I feel the same way, and you have an interesting perspective because your rookie year was essentially Robert Irsay's rookie year, so you were really a part of this resurgence of the Colts in so many ways, and then the immediate downfall. Now, your last year here, 79, when things really got ugly, right?
Yeah, it got real ugly. We had traded Lydell Mitchell, and we had got rid of Raymond Chest. We got rid of all. Bob Irsay had figured out by that time that you made a lot more money by the less amount of salaries you paid. Didn't matter if you won or lost in those days, or even today. I mean, as much because they share all the revenues, so on and so forth. And Irsay bought the team, and he just figured out, listen, if I don't have to pay the players very much, then, I'm going to make a lot more money. And he started getting rid of players right and left.
Well, tell me about the Bob Irsay you met in 1972.
Well, it was strange because when I signed with the team, Carol Rosenblum still owned it. I was drafted, as you might remember, in the last round in 1972, mm-hmm. 17th round, and I came in, a long shot to make it, and I didn't pay much attention to it. I just knew that it had changed hands, and there was a new general manager, Joe Thomas, and really for me and guys like Bruce Laird, who were in my class that year, and Lydell Mitchell and Glenn Doughty, and it was really a benefit to us because there were so many older players on the team, and Joe Thomas wanted to mold it as his team, and he started getting rid of all these guys, and they didn't handle it well, just like Jones didn't handle the Tom Landry firing. Irsay did not handle the taking over with Joe Thomas very well either. I mean, they benched Johnny Unitas after five games. I mean, you can't bench Johnny Unitas in Baltimore. Then they traded him after that year. Mm. So it was a bad start. I remember the first preseason game we ever played, we were training in Tampa, of all places, because Rosenblum had threatened to move the team to Tampa if he didn't get a new stadium, and that's why we were down there in training camp. And, Unitas didn't play that game, and he's standing on the sideline, and nobody had met Bob Irsay. We didn't even know who he was. And so Irsay comes down to the sideline and saunters up beside Johnny Unitas and says, "Hey, I'm going to have lunch with you tomorrow." And Unitas just looked at him like, "Who the heck are you?" Is exactly what he said to it. And Irsay was his face turned red, just like his hair was red then. So it wasn't a great beginning between those two, and it wasn't a great ending between those two, that's for sure.
Now, in 1972 through 75, is Robert Irsay the caricature that I grew up hearing about at that point? Is he that guy then?
If you mean the problem that he had with alcohol?
Yes.
Yes, he had come into the locker room several times after games, not in complete control of himself. I remember we had a heartbreaking loss at Dallas one time, like 35-33 game or something, and he comes in really loaded, and he just can't wait to show us his buddy who can do one-arm push-ups. And I was like, what? After our first season, in 75, after Ted Markvelder's first season, we win 9 in a row and go from 2-12 to 10-4. The next preseason, we're playing our final preseason game in Detroit. And, preseason doesn't mean much in the NFL. Everybody knows that. And we've lost, I think that was the third game in a row. And he comes in the locker room, wants to fire all the assistant coaches, and told one guy, Ray Oldham, to go stand in the corner. I mean, he was just completely out of control. And I remember Jimmy Irsay that night. Jimmy was so embarrassed that night that he got on the bus with us, and he was in the back of the bus. Bob Irsay gets on the team bus and screams, "Jimmy, come out here right now. I know you're back there." And here's what he says to Jimmy. He says, "Jimmy, you're embarrassing me." it was like, what? And we felt so bad for Jimmy Irsay. He had a tough, upbringing in that environment, no doubt.
So, Stan, here you are, 1975 to 1977. It's like the olden days, late 1950s into the 60s with the Colts again. The fans are rabid. It's the world's largest outdoor insane asylum. All things are good in Camelot then, right?
Yes, when you're winning, they are, except that, you know, after 75, we talked about Ted Marchibroda quit that night after Detroit, if you remember that.
Yep.
He quit because he wasn't going to fire all his assistant coaches, and then Burt Jones and the rest of our team said we were not going to play in the first game against New England Patriots. So he went through a standoff, and finally they met on the Mighty Eye, which was Irsay's yacht, Joe Thomas, Ted Marchibroda, and Bob Irsay, and worked out an agreement to follow through for a year or two. Joe Thomas was gone after that next year, and that really hurt because Joe was really good at getting talent and signing talent, and Ted was really good at coaching us, and we didn't have both of those factors after that. We survived until 77, lost that double overtime game, and then that was basically the end of the Baltimore Colts, that double overtime loss, the last time they ever played a playoff game, the last time they ever had a winning season.
Now, this is tough because you have moved on at this point in 80 to the end here in 83 in your professional football career. But from a distance at that point, and I know you obviously had a very warm feelings towards Baltimore. You end up making your home here, starting your family here. But from a distance in the world of professional football, what were the Baltimore Colts viewed as from an outside standpoint at that point?
Well, you remember Al Davis had moved to Oakland by that point, and it was sort of franchise free agency because Al Davis had sued and won, and there was no stopping anybody at that point. They didn't have any league rules against him. So we knew what Irsay was up to, and you saw the drunken news conferences and where he just flat-out lied about what he was doing. But I had gone on to Detroit and into the USFL with George Allen. In fact, I was in Phoenix at that time when they moved, and Phoenix was one of the cities they were talking about moving to. So if you, I don't know if you remember that, but
yeah.
it was Indianapolis, Phoenix. Those ones were trying to woo Bob Irsay. And I remember saying down there, I said, "Be careful what you wish for." And then they end up getting Bill Bidwell, who's almost as bad as Bob Irsay was. But luckily, Bidwell's son, like Irsay's son, was a much better person and a much better manager. And both those teams are better off now with the sons running them. But we just looked at it like, who knows what that guy's going to do? When he did move, it was like you couldn't believe that they left Baltimore because this is the Baltimore Colts. Johnny Unitas, the greatest game ever played. How do you move it? A team like an iconic team like that out of the city? But Bob Irsay had no appreciation of those things.
Amazing. Look back at history, and you kind of mentioned it there, but can you recall a specific moment when you found out the Colts had left town here?
Yeah, I was sitting in George Allen's office in Phoenix, and the word came across, and I think he might have been even the one that told me, because we were having a meeting. As you remember, we played spring football then. I was in the USFL, and so we were in the middle of the first season of the USFL, and all of a sudden, it was the first, it might have been the second season of the USFL. It was 84, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so it was the second season of the we were playing in Arizona then, and our team was, and all the, he tells me this, and I just said, well, first of all, that's a shame, but you can't put anything past Bob Irsay. He'll do anything to make a buck, and I think he got money out of it and put it in his pockets, and that was it.
Amazing. Former Baltimore Colt, Stan White. And Stan, we can't thank you enough for your time today. I think it's important to look back on these things whenever you get the chance.
Yeah, because I run into, a lot of Raven fans now are old Colt fans with their kids, and they've adopted the Ravens. At first, they were very reluctant to do so because they love the Colts so much, but they become Raven fans. So I see them at the games all the time. I see them at the functions all the time. They still remember those days fondly. But the good thing is we have the Ravens now for them to look at fondly in the present and for their kids to enjoy in the future, too.
Yeah, to me, it's all part of one big umbrella of Baltimore football and this tradition that continues very much to and through this day. Stan, thank you so much for your time, and we'll catch up again soon.
All right, Brett.